What's up, capital raisers? Welcome to another Build Your Legacy webinar investment series. We are privileged to have the wonderful, amazing Keely Hubbard, a capital raising coach, a syndicator. She's an entrepreneur that helps other women entrepreneurs make money and become better salespeople. So we're going to talk about a couple of things. Before we get too crazy, how about we start with this? Keely, introduce yourself. Let us know how you got into this real estate syndication game and capital raising and whatnot.
Yeah, you bet. Well, I'm so excited to be here. I see a lot of familiar faces. So glad y'all are here. I've got a sales background. I've been in sales for 18 years, built a pretty big career in the corporate space, was VP of sales when I was 30 years old, managing about 600 salespeople and a little over $220 million in revenue. So done a lot of coaching in my life. Like many of you trying to get out of the corporate rat race, I just got tired of it. So I quit, started my own consulting firm back in 2017, been coaching business owners ever since. And at that time, my father, he's been in the financial markets for a long time. That was my background as well, was in financial education. When I say finance, I mean Wall Street, right? So he was like, we're getting out of Wall Street. You know, the markets are crap, as many of you know now. We're seeing that even more evident now. But we got into real estate and he was like, do you want to go into business with me? If y'all know my dad, I was like, heck yeah, I'm totally in. Love doing business with him. So we got into real estate back in 2019, doing multifamily. And we also build Texas vineyards from the ground up. And having gotten into this space, I had a lot of people that said, can you teach us sales when it comes to raising capital? And it's been a really rewarding side of my business. In addition to corporate sales trainings and some other stuff that I do, I really love working with people that are raising capital. So that's how I got here today, Ruben.
All right. So you also, I believe, have a capital raising coaching business. Is this correct?
Yes.
We're going to have to chat about this. We're going to have to chat a little bit about this because I'm getting ready to become a capital raising coach and I have lots of questions. We should be launching that probably at the beginning of February, somewhere in there. Andy, tell us a little bit about yourself, brother. How did you get into syndication and raising capital and whatnot?
Well, these guys, though, they don't want to hear from me, really, but I'll be quick. I've been in this game for a while. I got in out of college. For any bold folks like me, I kind of Magoo'd my way into it. If anybody remembers Mr. Magoo, he kind of had all these things that he was like crashing and breaking as he was going along, but then good things kind of happened behind him. So he kind of got out unfrayed. So that was kind of my experience. And now we've been doing about 20, 22 years, working a lot on the build-to-rent space. So happy to be here. I got a lot of hard-hitting questions for Keely. I can't wait.
Okay, cool. And for you guys that are in the audience, welcome once again. Start, as you're listening, start thinking about some questions because we're going to open it up for questions at about 45 minutes after the hour. You guys have carte blanche to ask Keely or Andy or myself anything that you want to, but probably, you know, you guys get us every couple of weeks. So direct them towards Keely as much as you can. However, we may add our 2 cents. Some topics that we may cover today, although I'll do caveat beware, we may not cover all of these topics because we're just having a general conversation. It's going to be turning strangers into repeat investors, personality profiles. I have some stuff I want to talk about there because I like DISC. I like Myers-Briggs. There's one by Ray Dalio called principlesu.com. It's really good. 5 fatal sales flaws, making capital raising fun, how to scale your capital raising, how to build a brand that stands out, conversation strategies that prevent objections. These are some of the things that we could be talking about today. So why don't we start with, you know, what when you are doing a capital raising coaching session with somebody, what are the first things that you want to find out about where they are in their business? And how do you direct those kind of conversations and coaching clients to have success in this space?
Yeah, well, everybody's starting from a different spot. I work with people that are completely brand new, don't even have a logo, a brand yet. They don't have a list. They have nobody, very small friends and family network. And then I've got some more seasoned syndicators that a lot of you probably know. I won't call them out by name, but you know, they're raising $3 to $4 million per deal and they're looking to double that. So depends on where they're at in their business. That's where we've got to start, obviously. But I really believe that moving the needle in your business depends on where you have investors falling out in your funnel. And a lot of people think that you've got to dump the more people that you put into the top of your funnel. I just need more leads. If I could just get more leads, I could raise more capital. And what I've often found is that, you know, they have a lot of leads coming through or a decent amount of people that are reaching out to them, but they're not converting them into investors. And so they're focused on the wrong problem. And the focus there should be really getting good at the conversation, qualifying them, prepping their investors, really building trust. So when the deal comes through, you know exactly how much capital you're going to raise. And it's not a crapshoot. It's not well, I'm targeting a million and I come in at 500. And I really believe that in this industry, there's too many people that have that belief system. Well, that's just how it works, right? You target 2 million, you come in at a million, you're doing pretty good. And I really believe that if you're running a really tight sales process, because this is sales, right? If you're a business owner, you're in sales. If you're raising capital, you're in sales. But I truly believe when you run a tight sales process, you really qualify your investors, you have strategic conversations, you should come within 10 to 15% of your target every single time. And that doesn't mean that we're lowballing, right? We're putting our goal out there. If we know we want to raise, we look at our list, we've got clarity on how much capital is ready to move, we're coming within 10 to 15% of that target. So to answer your original question, Ruben, I think it depends on where they're at in their business, but I want to take a look at the funnel and where's money falling out and start closing those gaps first.
Okay, cool. This is fascinating because Hunter Thompson, one of our friends, he likes to talk about instead of trying to change your conversion ratio from 1 out of 10 to 2 out of 10, you should get in front of 10,000 people. And you're saying probably some similar things, but you're also saying, hey, how can we actually improve that ratio as we're growing our funnel? So talk to us about the funnel. You know, for somebody that's an existing syndicator that wants to improve that ratio and improve the strength of the funnel, how do you even set up a funnel? What kind of stuff do you help people set up, or what kind of things do you teach when it comes to improving your funnel?
Yeah. And I want to say too, that I love Hunter. I respect everything that he's built. I have found that for a lot of clients, it's hard to get in front of thousands of people. And a lot of people that are starting out don't have marketing dollars. They don't have the money that it takes to really drive accredited investors to their site. And even if you were to do that, if your funnel, right, we'll talk about what a funnel is. It's such a catchword in this industry, but if your funnel's broken and you have a bunch of investors coming through, but they're not converting, you're going to find yourself continually frustrated. And maybe you're making great money on the acquisition side and asset management fees and refis and all the capital events, but you're bleeding out on the investor side. So it's eventually a wash because you're paying so much money to try to get traction and get in front of people. So, you know, building organic and generating organic traffic, I say the stuff that people don't want to hear. There's a lot of fantasy marketing out there that all you need to do is, you know, get on 100 podcasts and, you know, just get your name out there. Well, if you're getting on 100 podcasts and it's all within the real estate space, we're talking to each other, right? Like, we're peers. You're probably not going to passively invest with me, maybe occasionally, but I need to be in front of people that y'all know the blue ocean versus the red ocean. I need to be in the blue ocean. I need to be the only real estate investor in the room, the only real estate investor on the podcast. So it takes consistent, persistent action to really build an investor community. And I'm a firm believer that you don't need more than 2 to 5 people a month. If you could just, because that's manageable. If you could target 2 to 5 people a month that you're going to have new conversations with, and these are people that can invest with you multiple times per year, right? They've got a higher net worth. They have the ability to invest with you multiple times, and you can target 2 to 5 people a month. You're doing a great job. I have a client that's raised 20 million on a very small list. His first 10 million, he raised on 125 people. It's not a lot of people, right? But he's really good relationships, and it's not an investor list. It's a community of people that really know him well. So I'm a big believer in those conversations, generating organic conversations, whether it's through LinkedIn. I'm not a fan of jumping in people's DMs. Like, don't go out there and message thousands of people. It is such a huge turnoff. Y'all know how much it turns you off when you get that crap in your inbox. We don't want to do that to investors. So make a hot list of people that you would like to eventually have a conversation with, and genuinely engage with their content for at least a month before you reach out. They keep seeing your name pop up. A conversation will start organically from that, but people don't want to hear that, right? Because it's not the fast and it's not the easy button. But a lot of the stuff that creates a lot of money on the coaching side, I could tell you all the things that you want to hear and make a ton of money coaching. It's not a sustainable long-term business, and it works for some people. But again, if you don't have tens of thousands of dollars to put into minimum $5,000 a month to put into marketing, it's going to be very hard to build a list where you have thousands of people and getting in front of thousands of people. So what I'm here to tell you is you can raise millions of dollars by having quality conversations with 2 to 5 people a month. And it's getting strategic on where are those people? Yeah. Where are they? I'll give you one example of a client that they're in Dubai, and I've coached them for a while now. And my goal is like, go to the 5-star hotel. There's 7-star hotels in Dubai, right? Yeah. Like, there's so much money over there. Make it date night once a week. Go sit at the bar, and that's y'all's goal. Whoever sits on the right side of, you know, their husband and wife, whoever sits on your right side, start a conversation. Whoever sits on the left, start a conversation. There's so many people with money at country clubs, at 5-star hotels, at Del Frisco's, Ruth's Chris, Fleming's, all of the nice steakhouses out there. Start having dinner out at a steakhouse, but don't sit at a table, sit at the bar. and start conversations with people. And this is an organic way to build traffic and build an investor community of people that can invest with you multiple times a year. I'll pause. Right, you know, I can just keep going.
I want to inquire about something because Vinny Chopra comes on the show frequently and he likes to talk about, I never ask anybody for money. I just share what I do. However, that does not sound like a sales process to me. So tell me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think when people hear the phrase, I got to ask people for money, a lot of syndicators shrink back because there's so many things that we hate about the typical sales process and all of our bad experiences that we've had with salespeople. And so we think, oh my gosh, I've got to convince these people, convince strangers that I meet and push them into doing this and ask for the money. My theory on this and what I've proven, I've been in sales for a long time, is I never ask for the close. I make the client give it up. And what I mean by that is because the process is so tight, we're preventing all the objections. So when we get to the end of a conversation, it is a clear yes or no. And 90% of the time, if they are qualified in three areas, it's a yes. So I am not a pushy, aggressive. I hated all that about sales. So I had to learn it I had to learn it myself in the trenches, losing deals, you know, in sales for a long time, hired a coach too at one point to really understand how to sell in a way that felt authentic to me, where I wasn't doing all the work. We should not have to sweat it out and stress over every single capital raise and feel gross because we're having to push people into investing with us. So it's run a tight process. You clear all the objections, you get the stuff out of them that they're not telling you, because that's really where the money is. What are they not telling you? What are they might be saying certain things to you, but what are they not telling you about their real concerns? Right? The real things that could get in the way of them saying yes when you actually have a live deal. Those are the conversations we have to have. And I call them disarmingly honest conversations. And if we can do that, we can clear these objections. When we have a deal that pops up, there's a lot of trust there. And 90% of those investors should be moving forward if they're qualified.
Let's dig a little deeper on that, because I think this is a lot of people on this call are at the stage where maybe they've got the funnel. Maybe they've got some really high net worth individuals in their network, but they're struggling with the what to say. You talked about clearing objections. So let's be some more specific. I think one of the things I've heard you say before, which is really good, is the decision maker, right? And getting on the call with the wife and the husband and talking through some of the objections, because the financial planner, he's getting his money pulled out of his commissions in order to put in your deal. So be a little more specific on some of the things that you're having these conversations about, because I think that would be helpful for the group.
Yeah, absolutely. And I used to raise capital for a private stock options and equity fund with my partner. And we used to do it old school. We'd literally send direct mailers. We'd have a room full of 25 people at a nice steakhouse where we're paying for their dinner and we get to pitch them on our investment fund. So I've sat across the table from investors in many conversations. I've raised almost $41 million now in my career between real estate and vineyards, and obviously the stock and options fund. And I will tell you right now, if I could not get the wife on board, there's no chance. There's no chance. And I say the wife because y'all know in this world, it's a man's world for the most part. There's other women in here, but I think you probably agree with that. Most of the men are making the financial decisions for the investors we're dealing with. So we got to get the spouse on board. Or if it is the wife and she's a CFO, the husband's probably going to want to sign off on it. So we can't assume that just because they really like the investment, they're just going to say yes. So we have to get them involved. And the way that I do that in a conversation is typically I'm talking to, you know, just one person, right? The husband or the wife, I've got to get the other person involved. But something you can add in your process on your Calendly, Acuity, whatever you use. One of the questions that I have on there is your spouse attending the call with you? If so, what's their name? So it already prompts them. I will get quite a few meetings that have both people there. But if they're not there, I'm at a point in the conversation where I ask them like, hey, Andy, is there anybody else that, you know, typically you'd run this by that you bounce these decisions off of? A lot of investors tell me like, hey, I'd love to get my spouse involved so he or she can understand more about how this works. And so I ask that question, give them an example of what most investors are asking me. Like, oh yeah, you know, my wife, you know, she knows we want to get invested in real estate. And I said, can I make a suggestion? Why don't we set up a call, the three of us, just so she can get on the same page, get on board with everything we've been talking about and ask me the question so she's totally comfortable with this. How do you feel about that? They always say yes. And yes, it's more time on your part, but I promise you, if you can get the wife or the husband involved and on a separate phone call and get them on board, you'll have more capital coming through. It's just a matter of asking the questions.
Okay, all right. So one follow-up, Ruben. Mm-hmm. So you're at the bar in Dubai and you got one person on one side and one person on the other side. What kinds of conversations? What's the starter? What's the intro? What's the tenor of the conversation?
Yeah, I always find a way in to, and obviously if somebody's got like AirPods in, they don't want to talk to you, don't bother people. But if you can tell they're sitting at the bar, and most people do because they are friendly and they are conversational, I just might say like, hey, is that whiskey? Because I order scotch, right? So if I see what they're drinking, I'm like, hey, I'm Keely, you know, cheers to Friday. Jesus, been a long week. And they're like, yeah, totally. It's like, hey, what do you do? And I just open the conversation that way. I am not there to pitch what I do. I am there to find out everything I can about this person naturally through a conversation, not where it feels like an FBI interrogation, but what do you do? Oh man, what got you into that? How long have you been doing that? Man, how was last year in your business? If you can get people talking about their favorite subject, we're all like this. We love to talk about ourselves. If you can get people talking about themselves, they will naturally, because of the law of reciprocity, they will naturally say, well, what do you do? And that's your opportunity to explain it to them after they already like you a whole lot, because you're genuinely engaging with them about who they are, their business, and their life.
Wow, cool stuff. All right, so I heard that you have a 90% closing rate when you raise capital. That sounds insane. So tell us about this whole process, or at least a little bit about how do we improve our percentage close rate?
Yes, and let me give you a caveat. It's 90% close rate for those that are qualified. And the key is, are we qualifying in three major areas? The first one is what I refer to as pain. What is their compelling reason to want to do business with you? And one of the common misconceptions that I've heard for a long time, like all the way back to 2013 when I was coaching my sales teams, oh, this guy's worth, you know, 10 million, he doesn't have any pain. I call BS on that. It doesn't matter how much money they have, there is an emotional reason of why they're wanting to invest with you. And we can't assume that just because somebody has $10 million that they're financially set. If they have 10 million, they're running in circles with people that have 30, 40 million, right? Like they're running in bigger circles of people where they're trying to get their net worth to a bigger level. So we have to be careful that we're not making those assumptions of who we're talking to. We have to figure out what are their compelling reasons and their pain points. I actually sent out an article. I do, it's called Capital Raising Chronicles, but I wrote a whole article on this that went out this morning about if we don't, like, no pain, no capital. Remember that sales rule. I've always said no pain, no sale, no pain, no capital. And oftentimes we get on a call and we think, if I can just show them how amazing multifamily is, self-storage, oil and gas, whatever it is you're raising for, and they'll see, they'll make the connection. This is so much better than stocks. They'll give me their money. But they don't, because that's a logical connection and people do not make decisions to buy anything, to invest with us from a logical perspective. They make it from a place of emotion. They justify it with the logic. And the emotion is, what I'm doing right now isn't working. I've lost, you know, in my portfolio, $260,000 this year in the stock market. I feel like I'm getting behind on retirement. I've got a lot of, you know, kids' college funds to pay for coming up. I've got two daughters. I have weddings. Like, we have to find out that information from people. So we have to qualify them from a pain point first, anchor their awareness of why they should care about what you do, because people are creatures of habit. They're not going to make a change in their portfolio unless there is a strong, compelling reason to do so. And one of the issues with when we sell on greed, the greed factor of look at how much money you could make, look at how amazing this investment is. Like, how could you not, like, wouldn't you rather earn, you know, 12% a year cash on cash versus losing 19% in the stock market? If we sell on that, there's zero urgency for them to do anything about it, because I can be greedy 6 months from now. I don't have to be greedy today, right? There's no urgency when all we talk about is all the shiny objects of look at how amazing our deal is. So we have to find the compelling reason first. Why now? Why our investments? What isn't working in their current portfolio? And how is it making them feel about their financial future? We start there. The second place that we qualify is money, right? Do they have the capital to be able to invest with us? And it's not, we can't just check the box and say, yes, they do, because they told me they did on their form. We've got to ask those questions. How much capital are they looking to divest out of the stock market or out of their current portfolio if they were comfortable with the types of investments that we offer? Where is the money coming from? Is it currently liquid? Is it set aside for any other investments that they're currently evaluating? How helpful would that be if you knew that they're also evaluating an oil and gas opportunity in addition to a deal that you have coming up that you're opening in a month? We can start to ask some questions of how will they make that decision? How are they going to evaluate the two? What's most important to them when they make decisions like this with their investments? So the third one is how they make decisions, not just what's most important and how they make their decisions for investments like this, but who else should be involved? And are there any deal breakers? And deal breakers is the stuff that nobody wants to bring up. I don't want to rock the boat. The conversation's been going so well, right? Like, let's just keep it kosher, keep everybody happy, and they'll invest with me. But your job in sales is to rock the boat. Your job in raising capital is to rock the boat gently, right? I always put that in parentheses, gently. And I mean, ask the tough questions. What are their concerns? You better get that out on the table now. Just because you don't ask doesn't mean they don't exist. I'd rather have the conversation with them if they do have concerns. What are their concerns? Do they have any deal breakers? If you're talking to somebody that has invested in 17 syndications as an LP, what do they look for in an operator? What are their concerns going forward? And having those conversations with people really build trust. And if I qualify in those three areas, right, and I'm able to move to the next step of the process, I know that they're qualified. I have a 90%. That's where the 90% close rate comes in. If they're not financially qualified, if I can't find a pain point, or they just don't really seem that interested in it, I'm not moving forward and spending time on a call, wasting my precious time if I don't see that they're qualified in these areas. So there's sometimes you may cut a call short, not in a rude way, but just like, hey, I don't think that I'm the right fit. So we have to remember that we have rights. I've been saying this for years, like to all my salespeople, you have rights as salespeople, and you are salespeople in here. You're raising capital, you're in sales, you have rights. And those rights are that I don't have to just do the dog and pony show and potential investor, you know, throws the stick and said, go chase it, bring it back. Then maybe I'll invest with you, send you an email with 30 questions that you spend an hour and a half answering in detail, and they still don't move forward, or they ghost you. That's the stuff that we don't have time for. Your time is just as valuable as any potential investor that's out there. We're going to be respectful. We're going to serve people, but we also teach people how to treat us. So if you think about that qualifying process, think of it like a long hallway, and you are walking side by side with your potential investor in this long hallway. And in this hallway, there are doors on the right and the left-hand side. And these doors are where they could exit the conversation for whatever reason. I don't know if I have time for this. I'm not sure about real estate. I've never done this before. I got to talk to my spouse. This is a lot of money. All the potential objections. The goal of the conversation, as we're qualifying, and we're qualifying by asking these intentional questions, is we're closing those doors as we're walking down the hallway where they could potentially exit. Why? Because we had the conversation about it and we got clarity. So when we get to the end of the hallway, it is a clear yes or no. And at the end of the conversation, you know, this person's ready to invest $125,000. 100 grand is coming from a cash account or a brokerage account. The other 25 is coming from an IRA. They're fine with a class B or C property in these three markets, and they're ready to move their money. The spouse is on board because you've talked to them. That is clarity in your capital pipeline where it's not muddy. So you can literally say when you go into a raise, yeah, I can join you on this general partnership team. And I know for a fact I can bring 900,000 to 1.2 million to the deal. And you come within that range every single time. And that clarity comes from the conversation.
One thing, because I've heard her talk about it before, and I think we should hit it for the listeners, is that you talk a lot about $50,000 is here today, $50,000 is probably gone to somebody else in the future. And something that you do, I think, is really subtle but really important, is that you kind of put the onus on them to let you know if that capital is no longer available. Can you just talk a little bit about that? Because I think it's huge. In capital raising, we don't have a true tally of what's available for us to bring to the deal.
Absolutely. And a lot of that comes into like staying in touch with your investors. This is compared to the other sales processes that I've done myself and I've coached. This one can be a little bit tricky because you get somebody to say yes, and then you got to hold them there for 2 or 3 months, however long it takes for you to have another deal that pops up. So it's crucial that we are in connection with them and we're talking to them. And so any reason that I have to pick up the phone and call, I will. But in that initial conversation, if they are evaluating two different investments, and I say, you know, are there any other investments out of curiosity that you're evaluating where you want to deploy this $100,000 of capital? I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I've been looking at an oil and gas deal. I was like, oh yeah, that's awesome. I know quite a few people in the oil and gas space. Tell me more about that deal. And I'm just finding out information about it. And I'm not here, because this is a typical salesperson move, to gather all the information and then tell them why our deal is better. I'm not here to do that because it'll trigger them and they won't trust me. And their walls will go up if I do that. So I'm just finding out and gathering more information. I would say something like, Andy, you know, I'm curious, when you look at this multifamily opportunity that we have coming up in Atlanta, and you look at the oil and gas deal, how do you evaluate the two in terms of which direction you think you're going to go? Like, what's most important to you? And I'm figuring that out. And I know if I can talk them through that conversation, then I can either follow up and have clarity on when they're going to make the decision and follow up and call them to figure out if they did move that money into oil and gas. And if they did, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to get the next tranche of, you know, multifamily capital. If I'm finding investors that can invest with me multiple times per year, it's all about getting clarity and keeping the lines of communication open with them. I'm not trying to pull them to what we do. I'm more about attracting and drawing people in and letting them do all the work. You'll never hear me teaching y'all to push people into your investment. And what you'll find is if you pull back a little bit, it draws them in even more. Tell me about the oil and gas deal. What do you like about it? If there's any pieces missing, like, you know, what are they? It's like, wow, I mean, it sounds like a great investment. What's drawing you to multifamily? Oil and gas seems like it's pretty solid and fits a lot of your goals. And we're getting clarity there. Well, I really, you know, oil and gas isn't going to pay out for X amount of years, or I like the higher percentage return on multifamily. I want y'all to think of yourself like an advisor, like a trusted advisor in these conversations. We're not typical salesperson get treated like vendors, right? Like it's the dog and pony show. When you're a trusted advisor, not in a financial sense, right? We're not financial advisors, but when you're a trusted advisor, they, because you've had the conversation, they trust you enough to say, well, if you were me, what would you do? Once you understand their goals, they're evaluating two different investments, what would you do? That's where it comes to earning trust from people. We have to get out of this mindset of just running people through a funnel, right? Get thousands of investors running through a funnel and it'll spit out cash on the other side. And if I'm struggling in my capital raises, I got to get more people. What I want to remind y'all is that let's build an investor community instead of people that really trust us, that we know that if you come up with another investment, they don't really know what it is, but they say I'm in because they trust you. And that trust is built through intentional conversations. This is all about learning people, how they communicate, the things they're not telling you, and really building an authentic connection.
Awesome. Find the pain, discover the compelling reasons. Really good stuff. Let's cover a couple more things before we open it up for questions. So how about we start with personality profile assessments? What do you like about them? How do you use them?
Oh my God, I love personality profile assessments. So where it came from for me, when I was in sales, and I know in the chat, if you're an engineer, IT, you're an analytical personality, let me know in the chat. Just give me a heads up before I say what I'm about to say. Give me a yes. Okay, used to be. All right. Right. If you used to be, you're probably still that personality. Okay. I could not close that personality for the life of me. When I was in high ticket financial education sales, I was losing so much money, and I was in Austin, Texas, which y'all know is full of engineers. And so this is literally why I hired a sales coach. I was like, they come in the door, they ask me all these questions, they never make a decision, and I'm tired of losing. And he's like, well, first of all, it's not their fault. You're approaching it the wrong way, because my personality is like, I don't want the details. I throw away instruction manuals. I like either high level it or bottom line it for me, and I make decisions fast. Well, I can't just be who I am in sales and just blow people out of the water. That's why I was losing money. So I could not close the engineer to save my life. And that's my dad's personality. So I hired a coach and I learned all about DISC and why there's four personality types, why people communicate the way they do and why they make decisions the way they do. And y'all are going to laugh at this, but I really became the engineer whisperer. After I worked with this coach for like 8-9 months, I'd see an engineer come in and I was like, I got this. Cause I know they want to get into the weeds. So I'm going to drag them into the weeds and we're going to talk about it. Numbers, the ROI, all the thousands of questions they need answers to. I became really, really good at it. And I started using this assessment when I was in corporate, hiring directors, hiring salespeople. I screened everybody coming in, not just from a sales perspective, but for like team collaboration. You need to know the personality type of your general partnership team, especially with your investors, but just as important with your GP team. Because a lot of times the frustrations that you have with people and why they, like, you think my dad, like, God, why is he so negative? Why is he always looking for everything that could go wrong? I'm like, Dad, why can't you just, this is going to work. And I finally learned, like, thank God for that personality type, because bridges would fall down if we didn't have them and buildings would fall down. Like, Dad is always looking for what could go wrong. Don't make a mistake. Check all the boxes. So once I learned that, I could start applying it to my conversations and really learning to speak that person's language. We can't just show up in the world of, this is who I am, take it or leave it, right? Because you will lose money as a result. And my personality type is that D dominant, get to the point. It's the lion, they associate animals with it. But I was not being Mufasa, I was being Scar. If y'all remember the lion, the Lion King with the black hair, he was a mean lion, that was me. For a long time in my sales career, until my coach was like, you're attacking people with your words. You gotta smile more, you gotta soften your approach, you gotta talk slower, you gotta ask more detailed questions. So it's that self-awareness of who am I? What's my genetic makeup? I can't change it. And there's no right or wrong personality type. It's who you are. But it's learning how to be a chameleon and adapting your personality to keep your investor comfortable. That's the key. Fantastic.
Okay, cool. How about five fatal sales flaws?
Yes. Okay. Well, we've covered a couple of them, but the first one is not qualifying. When we don't qualify, we have a muddy pipeline of investors that we don't really know who's going to move forward and who's not. The second one is one of my all-time favorites. It's not setting expectations at the beginning of the conversation that results in sales pressure and tension. Even if you don't think that you are coming across as salesy, investors come in with their walls up. If they think you have anything to gain from this conversation, their walls are up. And it's not that you're acting pushy or you're probably like, man, why are they so standoffish? It's because we are so inundated by bad behaving salespeople on a daily basis that we're over it. So I lie to salespeople, just so y'all know. I've been in sales for 18 years and I fake being married. I take my little Oura ring and I put it on my, if I'm in a sales environment, right? I'm at a store and I'm just like, oh no, I'm gonna pull the husband card. Like, oh, you know, I gotta talk to my husband, even though I'm not married, because we hate salespeople. So to disarm people coming in with their walls up, we have to let them know out of the gate, give them permission to say no. And there's two ways that you do that. This right here, y'all, will change your whole conversation if you start the conversation like this. So I'm gonna give an example of that. I would say, Andy, you know, what we do isn't the perfect fit for everybody. It's really for a very specific type of investor. And we may have a great conversation today and really like each other, but you might decide it's just not the right fit for whatever reason. And if you get to that point, are you okay telling me that? They always say yes. Well, yeah, of course I'll tell you. Are you sure? You seem like a nice guy. Yeah, I'll let you know. Okay. The other side of that is maybe if I take a look at your goals and what you're hoping to accomplish and what we look for in our investor community, maybe I decide it's just not the right fit. I'm not the right person to help you. Are you going to be okay if I let you know that? This right here builds so much trust because they're like, wow, like it may not be the right fit. And I can tell her no. And I asked them twice, right? Are you sure? You seem like a nice guy. Then I told them it may not be the right fit from my perspective. Are you going to be okay if I let you know that? They always say yes. And say the third outcome is we have a great conversation and it is the right fit. And if we get to that point, we can talk about what those next steps would look like. Are you comfortable with that? If you start your conversation off like this, y'all, the walls go down. People are so much more open because they're not waiting for the other shoe to drop. They're not waiting for the sales pitch. And this is where it's a lot easier to have that disarmingly honest conversation about all the things that could get in the way of them investing with you. So I know I went off on a tangent, but that one's so important. So number two is no expectations. Number three is falling into the trap of free consulting. Most salespeople fall into the trap of free consulting. Why? Because we've been programmed and trained that know your product really well, be super friendly, talk to enough people and be really helpful and answer all their questions and they'll invest with you. And that is the longest road to success. This is why most salespeople, you know, you go to buy a TV at Best Buy, you have a question about the TV you want to look at, you ask the salesperson, he comes over there and he product vomits all over you, everything he knows about TVs. You're like, awesome, thanks so much. And you go and buy it on Amazon because you had no intention of buying it there in the first place. But he did all this work thinking he was going to get a sale from you. We sent an email answering this investor's 13 questions and they're detailed. We got to get into our underwriting. We got to run scenarios. We give them all this information and they don't respond back. So we work for free. We do free consulting. So we can't fall into that trap. And falling into that trap comes from not taking control of the conversation from the beginning, showing up as a leader and guiding the conversation and qualifying them first. We can answer their questions, but they've got to earn the right for our time to answer their questions, which means we have to figure out, are they the right fit for our investor community and what we do first. The fourth one, we talked about overcoming objections. You should not ever be overcoming objections because that ends up in a tug of war, right? And it's just egos involved at that point. They feel you trying to convince them. So all they're doing is resisting it. Let's prevent them instead of overcoming them. The fifth one is selling based on price. And a lot of this applies more in my other coaching and I have a bunch of clients that are like enterprise selling and business owners that have high ticket selling. But in our world, selling based on price or just trying to pressure investors like the deal closes tomorrow. Yes, that's true, right? We're under tight deadlines. But if all you do is pressure and do it from trying to create urgency from the deal closes, there are personality types it's called the conscientious personality. It's all of you, all of my friends in here that are the engineers that I could never close years ago. pressure doesn't work. It doesn't matter. You could say you can make $1 million tomorrow, but you got to make a decision today. They don't care. They don't care. They will not move based on pressure because they have to check off the boxes. That's why they're not like, got to build the bridge by tomorrow. They won't do it because like the bridge could fall down. It could hurt people. That's their frame of mind. So we have to be careful that we are not just simply pressuring based on the deals closing in a week. So those are the five in a nutshell.
Unbelievable. We have 50 people listening in. This is crazy. It's the most people that we've had at one of these Build Your Legacy. So they want to hear about capital raising and they want to tune into you, Keely. This has been amazing. How about we go into making capital raising fun? What can you do there?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, and all of you have probably felt this, right? There's so much stress involved in the syndication space, especially if you're a lead sponsor, right? And you're fielding phone calls from attorneys, broker, insurance, taxes, like all the crazy stuff that we deal with, plus the capital raise. I come from the hustle culture. And let me know in the chat if you know what I mean by this. When I was in corporate, it was to climb the ladder to get to VP of sales. I've got to do more, give more, be more, you know, more than the other person. I've got to sacrifice time. I don't have time for myself anymore. I don't have time for my family. I remember sitting in family events, right? Christmas, the holidays, and I was there, but it was like everything in the background was kind of a blur. Like I could hear people talking, but I wasn't present. And I wasn't present because I was so consumed with this hustle culture and I could not turn it off. And I've really learned, for me, this has been a big lesson for me the last year and a half from my own business coach, of you can have more and do less. Mm-hmm. It's all about being strategic. And oftentimes we put all this pressure on ourselves, like there's some big trophy to be won for who goes through the most pain in the process of raising capital. And we stress ourselves out. And what I'm telling you is the more fun you have, the more capital you'll raise. The more lighthearted you make it, the more capital you'll raise. The more grace you give yourself, the more capital you'll raise. Y'all all have the hustle. So stop beating yourself into the ground to do more, be more, you know, should have done it faster, should have raised more money. Look at this person over here. They've got, you know, 10,000 units in their portfolio. You're behind. Like this inner bully that we deal with, you've got to recognize that it's there. It's never going away. We all have it. It's never going away. It's our reptilian brain that is trained to protect us from things that could hurt us. The problem is it puts us into fight or flight in situations where we don't have saber-toothed tigers chasing us. Our life is not on the line, but we're in fight or flight. And when we're in fight or flight, you can't think clearly. And you're pressuring investors not knowingly, but you have this, like, we call it commission breath, right, in the sales world, but they feel the desperation because you have created the desperation by putting this pressure on yourself. So we have to take control of that inner bully. I name mine Barbara. I'm sorry if there's anybody in here named Barbara. I don't know why. Okay. My clients know this. I call her Barb. I'm like, listen, Barb, I appreciate you trying to protect me today, but we ain't got time for that. Get in the back seat. We're going this direction. And I always win. It doesn't matter what the scoreboard looks like. I am a fourth quarter champion. I always win the game. And some of you might be in a situation right now where you're $500,000 behind where you should be at this point in your capital raise. And what I'm telling you is you have to take control of your head and say, I always win no matter what. Because when you decide who you are at your core and what you believe to be true about yourself, who you are, you will make the decisions, you will take bold action, you will pick up the phone and you will find a way to win. It's when we resign in the middle of the process and that inner bully, right? Mine's Barb, is like, you're not cut out for this, right? The whole imposter syndrome, you shouldn't be doing this. You're not Joe Fairless, you're not Ruben, right? You're not these big names that we hear about. It's this inner bully. You got to tell them to shut up. Hey, I appreciate you trying to keep me safe, but get in the back. We're going this way. I got money to raise. I'm making bold moves and I'm believing in myself because I know I'm a champion at my core. That's really what it comes down to. And when you can realize that, you can have a more lighthearted fun. Have fun in the process. What's the point? Y'all, what's the point for a lot of you that have left your W-2? Many of you that are, you know, in the transition of, or that's your goal. What is the point of creating a whole nother vertical in our life of another business that sucks the life out of us, just like our W-2 did? Why not have fun in the process? And I'm here to tell you that it's possible. And the more that you smile and the more lighthearted you make it, the more fun you have, the more capital you'll raise. And a lot of that comes with just giving yourself more grace in the process, recognizing how far you've come and stop comparing yourself to other people.
Okay, sweet. I have an internal conflict. I'm going to take this time. I have Keely Hubbard on here. I'm going to ask a personal question, something that I'm particularly struggling with, because I've been very much of the mindset is I want to work smart, not hard. And I've also been coached up to the concept of you can work less and make more and help more, right? So I understand this, but I recently read a book called How to Own Your Own Mind that was recommended to me by Zach Haptonstall. It was by Napoleon Hill. And he talks about, it's an interview with Andrew Carnegie. And Andrew Carnegie proceeds to say that every single massive entrepreneur that, you know, Hill has interviewed, they've all had one particular quality, which is discipline. And I'm kind of struggling and juggling this, like, do I want to work smart or do I want to be disciplined? And maybe there's a hybrid of the two. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, you can be both. You can be disciplined at this and not burn yourself out. Oftentimes I love a lot of these authors out there, I love Napoleon Hill, but one of them, like the 4-hour work week, I think has given people this, I don't know if y'all have read that or not, but yeah. Given people this mindset of like, man, why am I not making millions and only working 4 hours a week? We'll use Shark Tank as an example. Shark Tank entrepreneurs will tell you they don't work 4 hours a week. There is hard work that is involved, and there's discipline that's required. The discipline comes in showing up when you don't feel like it. That's really when it matters. Showing up when you don't feel like it, picking up the phone when you're feeling deflated from maybe you had an asset management call and things are tough right now, right? A lot of properties are struggling right now and you're under fire. Many of you that are managing deals, you're fighting fires right and left, and now you got to get enough energy and be happy to get on the phone. That's when it matters. It's showing up when you don't feel like it. It's discipline to do the things that are important, but not urgent. Those are the needle movers in your business. The things that keep getting pushed to the side. And maybe it's reaching out to a big player in the financial space on a podcast and getting on their podcast. Maybe it's reaching out and asking for the keynote. It's the big phone calls. It's getting into a family office. The stuff that is important, but not necessarily urgent, are the things that you're not doing. Those are the game changers. What are you avoiding in your business? And oftentimes the things that you're avoiding and busying yourself with, I got to build a spreadsheet and I got to track this and I got to get K-1s done. A lot of the stuff that you can offload, right? Delegate, eliminate, or automate is a process that I use for myself. Where is my time going? Where am I spending time that I could pay somebody $20 an hour, but my time's worth a lot more? And I could do the things that are important in my business, but not necessarily urgent. We can busy ourselves and procrastinate and avoid the things that scare us. It's tackling those things. I know all of you have at least one thing in the back of your mind that you've been wanting to do, you know you're supposed to do, but you've been avoiding it because it scares you. And you're scared of the outcome. What if I'm not enough? What if they don't say yes? What if I don't get it done? But if you never put yourself out there and you never try, you're never going to have it anyways. And that procrastination eats away at you. You think you're being busy, you're hustling nonstop, but you're not doing the important things in your business. So I believe, Ruben, like I'm a hard worker, right? Like there's some nights where I'm up till 1 a.m. I get these bursts of creativity. I'll stay up late and get stuff done, but I'm having fun. I think it's a lot of that. It's like, are you enjoying what you're doing? Are you having fun in your business? And when you take all the pressure off, it makes it so much easier to enjoy the process. So I'm not somebody that's going to tell you work less means work 10 hours a week. No, we're going to work hard. But when you enjoy the process, it doesn't suck the life out of you. But the discipline comes in of showing up when you don't feel like it. Posting on social media when you're not in the mood. Recording a video and putting yourself out there when you're worried about what people are going to think about you. That's when it matters.
Dang, that's amazing. Thank you so much. Andy, any questions or you want to open it up for questions?
Well, I think, just to comment, I think you lead I think what's misunderstood about that book, which I think hits to your point, Ruben, is the idea of working smart. We can kind of compress the amount of time that we're spending on the things that matter, right? And she's talking about those difficult things that we don't want to do, but we know we should be doing. I'll tell you what helped me last year was a habit tracker. And the reason why is because we underestimate what we can get done in a day and we're constantly beating up ourselves, right? Or we miss a day and then we miss the next day because we missed the last day. And so with the habit tracker, I can kind of say, oh, well, look what we got done this month. Look how many calls we got out to investors. Look how many touches we got out of texts. Like, look at all the whatever that is. That for me, it's, you know, I have family walks. I can't do them every day, but I would like to be able to say that we did it 3 times a week or, you know, 10 times a month, whatever that is. So anyways, I just feel like this should not be mutually exclusive. There should not be a discipline arm and then a work smart arm. They need to be married.
I love awesome. That.
Let's open it up to for questions, guys. Who has a question? You have carte blanche with Keely Hubbard. Take advantage. Leaders go first.
Hey, Keely. Matt Martin here with Theros Capital Group. Really appreciate you taking the time to hop on today. This has been outstanding. My question is, what is your go-to next step? You talked a lot about, you know, having the conversations, being a people person. I love all of that. That complements my style. But what is your go-to next step? Do you provide them with a resource? Do you channel them to your website? I just wonder if you have, you know, something you could share that you always go to.
Yeah, definitely. And are you talking about after we have the initial conversation with them, keeping them engaged?
Yeah, and I'll give you an example. So if I have a conversation with someone, maybe I meet at my kid's baseball game, right? Maybe a parent, and the conversation goes well, they check all the boxes, they don't leave any of the doors going down the hall. Maybe a next step for us is we've developed a passive investor's guide. It's just a resource. It's branded with our company, but it gives them something to dive into at their own pace, just to kind of establish credibility, but keep the conversation going. So I guess I'm wondering, do you agree with that strategy? Is that something you do? Or maybe do you have a step two that you like better?
Yeah. So yes, and great question, by the way. Yes, anything that you can send them that will keep them engaged. I'm a big believer in at least one contact per month, one email that's going out. That's not, don't just call it a newsletter where it's all about your company. Like, really give them value. Ruben, I know you guys give a lot of value in your newsletter, but teach them something about multifamily, about the process. At least once a month, you're staying engaged with them. I love texting, right? A big text community. Why? Because text has a 98% open rate. Average emails have a 30% open rate. So texting is a great way to stay in touch with them. Not irritating your investors, obviously, but staying top of mind. Another example that I really love that I've helped a couple clients build, and we have it within our Vineyard community, is a once a month webinar where people can come and attend and learn about what you do. Don't call it a webinar though, right? That's so boring. So we call ours investor parties. So for example, we call it Through the Grapevine. It's an investor party. The culture that we've created is everybody shows up with a drink, whether it's wine, it's their favorite cocktail. We teach them about the industry, like what's some exciting stuff that's happening in the industry, what's going on at, you know, Vineyard Blocks and vines going to the ground and pictures. And you can do the same thing for multifamily. So one of my clients has one that calls Money Matters for Physicians. And it's a once a month investor party exclusively for physicians. So we want to give it a name, give it a brand, make it exciting. Don't call it a webinar. But now, if you're doing that once a month, I'm a big believer, like we've just been talking about in our time, how do we work smarter? It's one to many. And so now it's not taking more of your time to talk to 30 people individually, but now you have this place where you can send people that you meet, right, at the baseball game on the weekend. And they're like, well, how do I learn more? It's like, oh, you know what? We do this investor party. We do it once a month. It's coming up in 2 weeks. It's called, right, XYZ. It's a ton of fun. It's just a bunch of people. Bring your favorite cocktail. And we talk about how to make money in real estate. Do you want an invite? And it makes it easy to funnel people in because it's strictly educational. It's not a live offering, right? Put your disclaimers in there. They can invite their friends. And now you have content as a recording that you can categorize and use and repurpose in the future. So that's one of them that I love, but build a culture around it, right? Every time we do Through the Grapevine, we started off with Dust on the Bottle, right? Music, Through the Grapevine by Marvin Gaye, Dust on the Bottle, or God Bless Texas. Like, there's theme music every time they get on, and it's fun. So a lot of this is about making it fun where it's not a boring financial webinar. So give it a catchy name, give it a subtitle, and start, you know, inviting your investor community, bring referrals in, and bring people that you just meet.
One thing, Keely, you're being too nice about the newsletter. Why do newsletters not work? Because I know that I've heard you say, so that you're being nice because Ruben and I have a newsletter and all that, but what we should be putting out there is a title and a subject
that
people care about, because they don't care about what Andy did last week, right?
It's true, but
that I think would be helpful just for Matt's question is the goal is to get them on a call, right? So almost everything that you're sending them is a call to action to get them scheduled on a call, whether it's a 506 B or C, you've got to be talking to these people, right? It's right. You're not raising money through email, right?
No. And it's easy to hide behind email, right? It's easy to just think, oh, I'm going to write 52 blog posts and push out content. And so we hide behind the computer. And I'll tell y'all what, I've got a guy that's raised close to $30 million, doesn't even have a website, y'all. Now we're working on it, right? He's making a life a lot easier, but he literally raises through the WhatsApp. He has group chats on there, talks to his investors nonstop. So we are simplifying his process. But my point in telling you that is it's conversations equal capital. We have to talk to people. You could have a list of 5,000 accredited investors. You send out an email, they don't have a relationship with you, you're not going to raise a lot. So we've got to be talking to people with the calls to action, like you mentioned, Andy. The only reason I don't like the word newsletter is because of people's perception. They will not open it if it's like the Texas Legacy Vines newsletter. It's like, yeah, whatever. But if I give it a catchy name that encourages them where they want, like Capital Raising Chronicles, instead of calling it the, you know, the newsletter, Keeley's newsletter for raising capital, that's boring. It's Capital Raising Chronicles and it has a sub, you know, subheader, sales tips to help you nail your investor conversations, scale your business and keep your head in the game. So it's got a logo, it's got a subtitle. And when investors see it every time it goes out, they know there's value in there. Get a catchy subject line. Don't just put the name of the newsletter in there. I've got a whole list of, I call them killer subject lines, but one of them that I love is, did you do this? So I put their first name in there and it's like, Andy, did you do this? And people are like, oh Lord, what did I do? It gets a really high open rate. I use it in the middle of a capital raise too. So get good at your subject lines that will increase the probability of people opening your email itself. And whatever you're sending them, make sure there's value.
That's brilliant. Something. Awesome. That's brilliant. All right. My man, Alex Kolodenko on here. Welcome, man. What's your question for Keeley Hubbard?
Yes. Hi, everyone. Thank you, Keeley. You've been sharing a lot of golden nuggets. Thank you. So my question is this. We've scaled our business fairly well. We have about 300 investors in 3 years, but we have a very large database of potential investors or people that already opted in. And for whatever reason, maybe the timing, maybe they were not ready to invest, you know, they bailed out. They didn't invest. What is your approach to sort of reigniting people? So for the most part, you know, our investors are sophisticated. These are accredited investors. My background has been in tech. I'm in Silicon Valley. My business partner also in Silicon Valley. So these people are hard to get. Mm-hmm. They're busy, right? They work in a technology job. Some of them are doctors, entrepreneurs. So it seems like sometimes you get one chance. You do really well, you have a connection, for whatever reason, again, they decided not to pursue. And then they're kind of watching your newsletters, they're attending the webinars, but it's hard to get them back on the phone, right? Yeah. And you know, we've been doing some in-person events, we've been doing educational events. So what is your approach to sort of reignite their interest again? And ultimately, you want to get them on the phone one more time and see, you know, if something changed, job change or career change or whatever reason. But how do you get them kind of back on track of on speaking terms again, right? Because these people are busy. I mean, you're texting them, they're replying. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't. They open the emails. I mean, we track all of that. But so what is your approach to get them back on the phone?
I love that. And first of all, I want to commend how well you know your investors, because that's important. Anything that I coach on or I give strategies to, I always put the caveat, make sure you cater this to your investor list, because if you know they're short on time, some strategies are not going to work for that list versus others. So one of my favorite resources, and Ruben, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this or not, but it's usually, you know, something I keep for clients, but
feel
it's
free.
Can I get, okay. So if y'all want a copy of it, I'll figure it out. Maybe shoot me an email. I'll give you all my email later, but I call it the close the file email sequence. And I've used this for years in sales, right? When I was selling financial education and obviously in the capital raising space as well. And this whole email sequence, there's three emails that go out, but you got to tweak it and customize it for your list. I would incorporate text message as well, Alex, into this resource. Give them an option. So you'll see in this email, it's like, hey, we haven't heard from you in a while. We've sent out, you know, X number of emails, this many deals, but for some reason, it just hasn't been a good fit. And give them a quick response where they can say, you know, number one, I'm just not interested anymore. Please remove me from your list. Nobody wants their file closed. I'm telling y'all this. I've been doing this long enough. When you threaten that they're coming off your list because you're cleaning out your database and you only want to help people that really need your help, they don't want off your list. So oftentimes they will respond and maybe they'll say, I am interested. I've just been really busy. Can I get on the phone with you for a 10-minute strategy call? And they have a link to schedule a call. Maybe it's, I do want to invest, but I haven't seen any deals that fit my criteria. Update your criteria here, or shoot us a text message here and let us know what you're looking for. So we can start to clean out where these people are on our list, but it gets people to move. I've told my salespeople for years, if you need sales at the end of the month, start firing clients. What I mean by that is start firing people on your list. Like, hey, we've been going back and forth about this for a long time. I don't want to keep bugging you with emails and keep bothering you with phone calls. I just feel like maybe it's not the right fit. So I'm going to go ahead and close your file. But if I have this wrong, let me know. And when you start doing that, people start moving like, no, wait. I'm so sorry. I've been busy. Things have been going on. So it's a great strategy and it's a nice way to do it, right? Like we'll pitch it in a way where we're trying to provide them value. We're not trying to be rude about it. But it's, yeah. Okay. So great job, by the way, Alex. That's an incredible community. And I think just cleaning out some of the muddiness will help you raise even more capital this year. Get some clarity.
That's golden. Thank you.
Yeah, That's good. All right. So for people that want to ask you questions that they didn't have a chance to, how do they get a hold of you and how do they inquire with you?
Yeah. So I would say probably my email. I'm just going to type it in the chat box because I'm a big email girl. Any social media platform, just know that if you message me on social media, I'm probably going to send you a voice message back. I'm not a big texter. I'll send you a voice recording.
I'll read it out loud. It's Keely at KeelyHubbard.com for our audience that's not watching.
Yes. Thank you. Email me there. There's, you know, if you, and I can ask you there if you want. I don't add people automatically to my list, but if you want to get the Capital Raising Chronicles, I think the articles are pretty good.
But they
keep you in the loop, you know, once a week. And yeah, I think out of all of this, I want y'all to know, like, if you're in this space, you're already like a champion. This is such, we get confused and bombarded by looking right and looking left at all of our so-called competitors and what they're doing. And we feel like we're behind, but you're not. Like, run your own race, celebrate your accomplishments from last year, but let's put our head down and work this year, but have fun at the same time. I think that's the biggest message I want to leave people with, Ruben, is it can be fun. There can be joy in the process.
Woo! That was amazing. I'm so glad that you are our first guest this year. This has been an absolutely incredible on fire. I hope it's not another 2.5 years before I have you back on the show. You were, I think, episode 72, right at the beginning of COVID. Very different world back then. Hopefully you'll be back sooner than later. Thank you so much, Keely. And thanks for everybody that tuned in and bringing your energy. This has been amazing. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Ruben. Bye, y'all. Have a blessed week.
Yeah.
Legacy Acquisitions.